What's up, people? Welcome back to another episode of Kickoff Sessions Podcast. This is episode 32 with your host, me, Darren Lee. And on this episode, I am joined by Ernest Cantillon. Ernest has extensive experience in the hospitality and beverage sector, having owned and directed bars and restaurants for over 10 years. He's owner of famous Cork restaurants, including Sober Lane and Electric. He's also director of Kinsale Spirit, which is a beverage company which has exports to the US and to China. Ernest has so much experience across hospitality and beverage sector. It was a perfect fit to sit down with him and discuss everything that's happening at the moment with small businesses, as well as getting his expertise, his knowledge, his perspective on careers for people coming into university. He took a completely different slant on careers compared to the traditional path when he first left university, became a chef, and then moved on to starting his own business. With everything that's happened at the moment, between bars, between restaurants, it was great to get Ernest's perspective on how small businesses or small bars can respond during this time, look for the silver lining, if you will, in the problems that are going on right now, and how they can plan for a recovery in the future. We chat about loads of great things, so from a career's perspective, what got him started, right up to the different types of economies, the Chinese economy, the US economy, how Ireland is a big exporter to these regions, why they are big exporters, including what type of products fit well in a Chinese market, what type of products fit well in a US market. We move on to the different recovery factors that people can use at the moment to respond to setbacks, as well as looking at the nightlife scene as a whole. So if you are aware, there is plans to make nightlife scene in Ireland extended a little bit longer by a couple of hours, and that has been a big push. Myself and Ernest go back and forth, talk about different advantages and disadvantages of this, as well as just some thoughts on the entertainment industry as a whole. So I really enjoyed this podcast. I learned so much from Ernest, and it was pretty chill. It was pretty laid back. Lots of good, funny kind of stories, and lots of good just learning outcomes from the whole experience. So before we get going, if you can follow me on Spotify, that'd be pretty sweet. If you want to share this podcast on Instagram, LinkedIn, or whatever you want to share it on, that'll also be much appreciated. But I'm going to leave it right here. Here is my conversation with Ernest. All right, let's kick off. Okay, how are you doing? How's everything?
I'm good. I'm great. I'm looking forward to this. It's nice to have a team, if you know what I mean, Rod. You know, it's very hard when somebody says, okay, tell me about yourself.
That's exactly it, because, like, as we mentioned previously, like, career's a huge area, especially for young guys now, and I think with COVID and shit, it's all, like, boomed, and I think the idea is that, like, people don't have the same flexibility as they used to have. Like, I know for yourself, you kind of went straight into starting your own stuff out of college, but, like, for my kind of era, they kind of move into bigger companies, and this opportunity isn't necessarily there from at the moment, so sitting down with yourself, talking about even your experience and lessons around there, as well as lessons for smaller businesses, would be pretty valuable. But before I kick off that, though, can you just give me a small insight into what you get up to, why you get up to it, and what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, for I suppose it's a very exciting time at the moment in that we've time to try things. So I suppose I'm stuck in bars and restaurants that are far quite traditional. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing things like cocktail subscription clubs and, usually there'd be no e-commerce in our business at all, really. And even if they would be just, you know, like using an app, like Flipdish or whatever. So we're just working on a new concept for electric cocktails, and we're going to crowdfund it in the next few weeks on Indiegogo, I think, because a lot of the platforms don't allow alcohol. So a lot of the things I've always been really interested in, but that haven't been that compatible with a traditional hospitality business, we're getting to have a go off it. Mm-hmm. And then Sober Lane, thankfully, the takeaway food is just flying. So it's nearly to the extent of, it's not as busy as the, say, turnover wise as the pub was, but it's quite profitable, and we're working really, like, so if it meant that I could keep that business and go back to maybe only doing 70% of the business that we were doing in the traditional model, I'd still be up. So trying to figure that out.
How was it when you pivoted off that? So when COVID hit and you were like, oh, fuck me, this, the whole world's going to burn. But then you moved to this, like, you know, takeaway business. What was your approach towards it?
We'd food that was quite compatible with it. And also we had done pizzas like for 15 years, and I wanted to get away from pizzas because it was getting really saturated space. And we had good pizzas, but they weren't the best pizzas. So we're surrounded by Latana and Novecento and really good pizza places, even just on the streets around us, not a mind, but in a delivery range. And I also think that a lot of pizzas don't travel that well. You know, they just, if pizza isn't piping hot, like it deteriorates rapidly. And we were one of the first companies in Cork on Deliveroo whenever a couple of years ago. They just didn't have enough drivers. Their systems weren't really in place. And I've learned the hard way about, I used to be very much an early adopter, try all these new things, all the apps. Like, there's no real reward for being first in that regard. There's a reward for the company because you got guinea pigs. But whereas now, like, going back to Deliveroo, they're just a different animal. You know, like, their software, their customer service. So it's interesting to have seen a big company like that 3 or 4 years and how they progress.
You've had that kind of ability to be able to jump around, though. You know, like, you've kind of had that opportunity to see what was different, you know what I mean, and to try. But do you think that's done because of the fact that you've had so many years in these industries and moving around? Like, as in, like, to take a step back, like, you know, you're someone who's, like, hyperactive, always trying loads of different shit. What was kind of the driver for you to go from, like, one pub to two pub to into the drinks business and going into this? Like, you know, what do you think has driven you to be that way inclined?
I suppose originally it just would have been, and maybe still is, you know, shiny penny syndrome. You know, there's something new over there. Let's go and look at that. You know, like, you know, Homer Simpson chasing the squirrel or whatever. But I've learned that they need to be complementary businesses really to work. So it's funny, in hindsight, 2020, some of the things I definitely should have done and didn't, and some of them I did do, and they, you know, I shouldn't have. So, like, an interest, you know, but whereas now I'm quite happy to diversify, but they need to be fairly complementary, you know, so I'm not splitting my time. So that's why, obviously, takeaway food is a given for someone like Sober Lane. The cocktails thing is complementary for Electric. One of the main reasons we're not doing that much takeaway stuff with Electric is, like, Sober Lane will keep doing the takeaway, whereas it's not a long-term play for Electric, really, just the way the building's laid out and there's nowhere to pull up outside, really, parking-wise stuff. So we're not that pushed about building it up. As I get older, I have a bit more discipline about saying no to opportunities, which is disappointing to accept, but it just, there's only so many hours in the day. And the biggest opportunity cost is time.
As you've gotten older, you've realised that you don't have the same time as we used to do when you were fucking 18. So how is that, like, adjusting your priorities or how you focus?
Well, I suppose life just isn't all about work, you know, so, and even just, like, I've had business that didn't work out. So knowing what that feels like, it definitely removes that bit of fearlessness. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really easy to start a business and it's really hard to close one. Even a successful business, just the legacy of them, you know, all the different accounts and paperwork and legal and accounting stuff. So I wouldn't say I've got wiser. I suppose I've just got maybe less adventurous, which I'm guessing happens most people as they get older.
But you've also been able to, I think, become more weathered by the experiences. Like, even the last year, you know, you carry yourself really well now. Like, so do you think your ability to manage stress at a high level or at a high pressured environment has improved? Like, you know, when you're my age, you kind of, like, shit yourself when something goes wrong and you throw your hands up in the air. But do you think that you've kind of just kind of, like, got through these kind of things a small bit?
I think it with age comes resilience. You know, like, it's, there's some cheesy line in some Rocky film, but it's about, it's like in Rocky 17 or something, but it's not hard you can hit, it's so hard you can get hit and come back. It just takes more and more things to knock you. You know, you'd say, Jesus Christ, for, you know, maxing our overdraft. You say, okay, like, we've been here before, we'll trade out of it. We have some side projects going that are draining cash off us. It's time to jettison them and whatever.
Like, you know, the complementary side of the business, you were saying that when you go from one business to the next, do you think that was kind of helped you essentially learn the industry better? Like, when you had you ever envisioned that you were going to go into different areas within the same industry and start, like, a drinks company? Or was it more so that, like, it just, you saw the opportunity when it lied? And, like, what's the correlation between this and your actual enjoyment with it?
Yeah, it's funny. So the drinks business wasn't my idea. It was my friend Tom. He's the guy who gave me my first job in a bar. Himself and his sister were working on this idea, and I think I just sold Sober Lane Dublin and was having lunch on Monday, and he said, look, I'm working on this idea, do you want to be part of it? I said, great. And he has a very good science knowledge and stuff, you know. And I had a thing in my head that I wasn't any good at sales. I had no experience of it, and I still wouldn't say I'm, you know, any great salesman, but with three business parts, we have different areas of responsibility. So Irish sales are my department, and so when all the pubs closed, we said, okay, we got to get, you know, we don't have a huge retail coverage, we got to work hard in retail. And I've actually loved it, something I had no real experience of. We have three reps on the road now, three really good guys. I talk to them every day. And we're working our way, you know, we want to get the whole Wild Atlantic Way covered before pubs reopen, and, you know, but for the summer season, and Dublin obviously is a very competitive space, and we have a plan for there. And so it's, I'm really enjoying that. So if you'd said to me before, would you like a sales job? I'd say it would be the worst possible job. Whereas I'm actually really enjoying it. And it's a lovely black and white one that you see your sales at the end of the week. You know, there's no customer experience or saying we're building something. Like, it really is like, this is what you're outlay, and this is what's coming in. Yeah. But it's very black and white. So it's quite, it's honest, if you know what I mean. It delivers, because in a restaurant, it can be hard enough to see when you're, you know, there's a time lag with bills and see things like food waste. So it's not always, you assume if you're busy, you're making money, which definitely isn't always the case. Whereas with sales, you pretty much are. You know how much you need to sell. And if it's selling, it's a good day. So it's, I like that part of it. And I wouldn't have before. And if it wasn't for COVID, we definitely wouldn't have gone in this direction. As we're looking now, kind of America and China, our focus, we're very much concentrating on retail and off licenses as opposed to pubs. We certainly hope to have some key accounts and things like that. But it's changed the whole way we're looking at it. And it's going to stay that way post-COVID for the foreseeable next few years that I can see anyway for us.
There's two things that I actually want to chat about. Firstly, about the sales thing. So sales is quite interesting. You strike me as a sales guy. You'd be a good sales guy. But do you think that, were you building it up more in your head that you were going to be shit at it versus the reality? Like, as in, because like for myself, let's say there's things that like, even my podcasting that I'm like, oh, fuck it, just kick it down the road. Yeah. When like you could be good at it, or do you think there's that element of...
It's confidence. Not like, I think for me anyway, certainly I find overconfidence intimidating. It's a quality I don't like. And I'm sure it's something that most, if you looked at lots of uber successful people, I'm sure they have buckets of confidence. But for me, as on the other side of the relationship, I don't enjoy dealing with that. And then maybe that's just more about me. But I had a buddy of mine set up a business when we were kids. I think he's a couple years older than me. So he was maybe 20. And I think it was my first summer after school or something like that. And he bought bandwidth from a broadband company, and he asked me to go around selling it on. So broadband packages. I think I went to 10, I made 10 calls. You know, I got the business cards made up and I got a supervisor and I made maybe 10 calls. I think nobody bought it. I said, okay, this is not for me. Mm-hmm. And I think I just probably was young and wasn't confident. Whereas now, I just definitely wouldn't take no as an answer first time around. You know, like, okay, when do we call them again? When, you know, and we'd say, look, well, we're stopped in the shop next door and they're flying through it. And, you know, do you want some of that action? And if you won't stock us, why? You know, tell me why you won't. No isn't good enough answer. You know, I know the stuff will sell. I know it's a good price. I know it's a really good product. And I suppose it helps that I believe in the product. You know, so the thing is working. And just for us to put it into an account that it won't sell either. Like, nobody wins from that. I have no interest in one, you know, one sale of one bottle, you know, like sitting there. Mm-hmm. So I think, as I said about, you know, to get older, you get resilient, you also just get a bit confident and you realize, you know, the difference between a hard no and a soft no. And there's a thing called the Smarter Egg. It's a guy called Aidan Enright runs it. It's really cool. I've been a member of it since it started, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago at the stage, 10 years ago. And it's a business network, and he's a coach. And you can join lots of ways. They have a book club and they have a business builder circle. And so, you know, whatever part of it you're into. But mostly just facilitates chats between people who are in business. And one time the guys who have 8 Degrees Brewing from Mitchellstown, really, really good beer. One of them, Scott, he's from New Zealand, I think. And he was saying they have this no assholes rule. So they just don't deal with assholes. And he went into it. So he said, look, we need all the business like everybody else that we can get. But he said at the same time, like, some people just thrive on conflict, or they're never going to pay you. You know, I was looking for free samples. And he said, just... that's, you know, life's too short. So if somebody's unpleasant to deal with, it's not you, it's me, but we're not going to do business. Mm-hmm. And I thought, geez, that's really good advice. You know, so I brought that back to our restaurant, and 99% of the customers are pleasant. Some aren't. And I think you just say to them, look, it looks like this is working for everyone. You're not having a good experience. We're not having a good experience. Your meal's on me, and let's call it quits. You know, you don't go and say, like, you're an asshole, don't come in again. There's no need to, you know, type it up. But I thought that no assholes rule was a really good one. You can collect, and I suppose when you hear somebody who has, like those guys sold out to Jemison Air Distillers, when you hear somebody who has a successful business, but it wouldn't have been that big when they were using that rule, I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe the customer isn't always right, and things like that. So just learning those bits and pieces as you go along.
you've learned different ways to kind of handle with people as well. Even when you mentioned customers there, even just interacting, and then especially with clients, which will be your sellers of your drinks, which is quite interesting because a lot of people kind of scavenge for sales. So they're like happy to take in a bad customer, and then it versus let's say working with actual good, reliable, trackable people. You mentioned US and China markets. So two opposite ends of the spectrum could not be further apart from one another. What kind of fears do you have facing those markets? Like, you know, sorry for a background story. Like I would have went to a couple of startup competitions in Dublin, startup events, and they talk frequently about the transition across like the pond and about how difficult it is and how they try set up Irish companies in different states. So it could be like tax fucking haven states. But I've just heard
Delaware and
people
all the stuff.
speak Delaware, all those like weird, shitty states.
Yeah.
But I've just
Delaware's
heard
not
people
so bad. It's boring though. Yeah.
Exactly.
Boring.
But I've heard people speak at length about the difficulty it is to hit the ground. How have you kind of encountered that, as well as the Chinese market, which is fucking God knows what happens there.
So it's funny that for two different reasons we've gone after those markets. One, I'm fascinated by the Chinese market. I think that
Same. I'm the exact same.
we, yeah, I think that that's just the way things are going. So we're probably ahead of the curve in that. We're probably making the market, and we'd be better off concentrating more in the States for 2 or 3 years, and then coming back when Irish whiskey is bigger there. But I'm just really interested. So China is my pet project, and loving it. I've built up some good relationships. There's a very active Irish Chinese Business Association. There's a few different ones actually. So that's one part of it. The other thing is that it's from a social media point of view, people are really interested in it. It catches investors. Well, we're doing good business there. We have multiples of it going on in the US. But I think everyone says, oh, yeah, you know, Irish whiskey in the US shooting fish in a barrel. No, it's definitely not. But it is a much bigger, more established market. And if you can get the orders, they're bigger. So with China, it's just a curious one. But we have, like, just to give you the randomness of it, we're engaging with a company at the moment called IDN and ADN. I don't know what it stands for, actually, but they have found a niche of supporting and business development for food and drinks, Irish, Europe, mostly European, but Irish and English, Irish and UK food and drinks businesses in China. So, like, one of the success stories is Jammy Dodgers. You know those biscuits with the red bit in the middle? So, like, they are selling container loads of them in China. So, like, why?
What
You
the
know, and
fuck?
then we've built up a really good relationship with a guy called Jianglai Weng. He's a friend of the stage. The guy lives in Fermoy, but he's from China originally, and he has imports, a number of exports, a number of products from Ireland to China. But he has a side business. It's probably his main business at this stage, where he sells chocolate to China. And, you know, chocolates for hotels, for pillows and all that kind of crack. But he was trying to crack e-commerce over there. And he gets chocolate from Switzerland. And he went to the factory and he said, look, give me 10 different products. I'll take a pallet of each. He put them all up online. First night didn't sell at all. But he made a chocolate teddy bear. And it like just the whole thing sold out in minutes. Ordered more. It's one of his biggest sellers. So just these, it's a very random market. It's really random to me, I suppose, because it's alien to me. But I'm fascinated by it. So
Does anything scare you about the Chinese market?
each year we do a budget. And we say like this is what we can afford to spend here. It is generating income, and we've a decent margin in the market. So the sales are backing up. We're certainly outspending there at the moment because we're trying to engage with supermarkets and chains there, and they want a proven track record and they want some national coverage. So, like, we have an employee on the road over there. We have somebody here as well managing them, and you know, and engaging with suppliers. So, we're investing in it, but I think it's worth the punt. And we decide we make every 3 months. We say, okay, can we still keep that project going? We still keep that project going, and we've had good luck with investments around in the last 2 years, which facilitates that, so we don't need to depend totally on sales to grow it. And then the US is one of my I have two business partners, Tom and Colin. Colin's baby. Colin has experience in that market. He worked for Heineken before. He was based in Germany, so he's international alcohol. He has experience of, and he sold both seafood products and alcohol products in the US. So that's his baby. He's involved in a bar in Colorado, so he likes going to the States, and we. Kinsale is twinned with Newport in Rhode Island, really nice place. And our big plan was to make Newport our beachhead, no pun intended, and you know, get into a number of really good accounts there. And Kinsale and Newport have this exchange every year where chefs come over, take over to the restaurants. And then COVID happened and it all shut down. So we said, okay, let's do the retail thing. Mm-hmm. So one of our best accounts at the moment is upstate New York. So we have really good coverage in these places like Rochester and Albany, and place I never would have heard of, you know, even up towards Canada. But just met a distributor, built a good relationship with him. And then he said, I can do good things for products. And it's funny, there's these 12 smaller distributors all work together. And they form this kind of a buying co-op. So it's just one of these random things that came up. Yeah, look, everyone who messaged me on LinkedIn or sends something, I chase down all these random leads. And a lot of them are tire kickers or, you know, but like, they're not all, you know, you only need one or two of them to click. So, and I find LinkedIn just to be golden as a site. I adore LinkedIn.
Yeah. I'm the exact same. I think LinkedIn, even, you know, yourself, for like my podcast or growing it or engaging with people is always great. And when I reach out to the companies and shit, it's the best form on it. But just back on those points, so like America sounds fucking, you know, it's a right tie to Ireland. It's a good distributor. I actually have a recommendation for you. I want you to watch a documentary on Netflix called The China Hustle. You'll actually really enjoy it, man.
I'm a pen and paper guy, so I'm going to write that down.
Myself and my mate watched recent enough, right? So basically, it's about all these Chinese companies that do reverse mergers with US companies get listed on the NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange, but they're all shell companies. So they all are like up. They're all like oil companies, they're coal companies, they're fucking paper companies, and they have like falsified financial statements to have like 100 million on them, but then they end up being absolute trash and nothing. So like, they have like such big ties with huge companies in the States. But that's why I just thought it'd be so interesting, because what I was going to ask you was, I was like, you know, are you going to go to China to be on the floor to just check it out or something like this? Because the reason why is because Chinese financial fraud is not illegal. Chinese financial statements is not illegal if it's overseas. So you can be you can be based exactly. So you can't get prosecuted.
Very interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's the way. I want you to watch it, man. It's only like an hour and a half. It's like, it actually is really well put together. It's on Netflix. But because for me, like, huge fan of Asia. I've always loved Asia. I've traveled Asia for years. Love it. I'd love to go back to I've never been to China, but I would like to move there, something like that. Or but a big thing for me was like Singapore, which I loved. Okay. And things like this. So something to check out. You definitely enjoy it, and it'd be interesting because it made me just be like, fuck, a small bit. So there could be a lot in there you might learn. So
the easiest way to limit risk anywhere is just no credit. You want the product, you got to buy it. And that limits opportunities. Somebody would say, like, you know, can I get a price for a container? And like, a container for us is about 26,000 bottles. So it is a great order. And they'd say, what's your credit terms? We'd say, like, you pay before it leaves the warehouse. Mm-hmm. And because we'd say, look, we're not big enough to take that hit. And they'd say, no deal. And we'd say, no problem. You know, let's come back when we're bigger, or you have the cash flow or whatever it is. But we'd always say, like, you can order less, you know, order a pallet at a time or whatever. So for us, maybe it's an overly cautious stance, but why take the risk, especially in a not being disparaging about the Chinese market, but it's so far away and we know that we know so little about it. We're dealing with people we don't know. I would say, as I said, we've built up a really good relationship with Zhang Lai, and we put nearly everything through him. So he manages all the customs and the whole offer. So he says, look, you know, you got paid, the stuff has got to the customer in good shape, on time. Great, that's all we can kind of do then. Like,
I want to take a slight slant and like, so like, you're like in the middle of like a hurricane essentially with all these businesses going around. But do you have any idea towards like when you were coming out of college and what you would have essentially done differently? Like, so you're coming out now and, you know, people that are my age are kind of like looking for different things to do. So they might have probably got jobs and might do other things, but it's given them opportunity to try different stuff. But do you have any perspective on not necessarily what you would have done, but how you would have thought about doing it? So for me, I jumped into jobs and I was like, fuck, No. So what would be your perspective, someone who's been in the hurricane?
So it's funny, my dad was self-employed, and both my parents always worked. So I suppose I just always kind of thought I'd be self-employed because that's what I grew up with. So so that wasn't that big a leap. My dad would own his own, he was 26 or something like that. And so he's been on his own 40 years plus. So so I suppose, you know, you're definitely going to be informed by your background. I ended up, so it's going back to the college thing. I only went to college because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And my parents said, look, it's 4 easy years, you know, we'll support you through it. You can play some rugby, you can go traveling in the summers, and you can just delay real life starting until you're, you know, for another 4 years. I said, happy days. Finished college, all my friends were doing, is it called the Milk Rounds or something like that? So interviews with KPMGs, and it was before the
milk,
like, Google was there, but it was before all those, they were big, it was all interviews with the Big Fours and, you know, Accenture.
Don't worry, man. I was in the Big Fours. Don't worry. I know this
okay,
well.
So I just, the career service, I don't know if they're very active then. So their mind was blown that I didn't want any of these interviews. No, I think I got a 2-1. So obviously all the 1H guys are all snapped up, and then, you know, they're snapped up probably even before they finish. But they kept trying to arrange interviews for me. And I said, look, no offense. I don't see the point of going to the interview because I know I'm not going to go working there. And they said it was interview experience. But I said, like, why do you need interview experience for interviews that for jobs that you don't want?
Yeah.
So so I went to be trained to be a chef then, because I was always into that. So I thought that I would like to be a chef. And I did that for something like a year. I really enjoyed it. But I just realized that being a chef is really hard and physically intense. And the biggest problem I had was no connection with the customer. So you're making this like really nice food and you have no idea. Like, even the way most places work is whether a customer finishes the meal or not, that food is getting, like, the plate, the chef doesn't even know if the plate comes back clean or not, if you know what I mean. So you have no real feedback, mostly only bad feedback, you know, if this was too cold or, and that might have been 1 to 100, but you're not getting the good feedback. So then I got a job running a bar, and random. So I went from one to the other. So the day I finished college, my last exam, the chef in course already started. It was a week late, so I started that. Mm-hmm. And somebody said to me, would you like to run a bar? And I said, yeah, I don't want to do it, I'll give it a go. And all the other chef trainees were going off work experience in hotels and stuff. And I just knew it was going to be like 6 months of boot camp, you know, of peeling potatoes, yeah, and just starting at the bottom. And I just said, okay, that's not for me. Yeah. So I did the interview and they said, okay, we'll hold the job for 2 weeks to finish the chef thing. So I didn't have a whole lot of time to think about these moves. I was 22 or 21 or something. I think I was 17 when I went to college. So I said, I don't have a whole lot to lose. Let's give it a go. And I was still living at home, so I had no bills to pay. And it's funny. I'd say what was a big thing there is I would have drank a lot in college, and I gave up alcohol when I was 20, maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. So that was even a mindset then. You know, I suppose I got my act together a bit,
kind of grew up,
and said, okay, well, let's have a go off this life thing, like, you know. So I was running the bar, really enjoyed it. And after a year of that, the guys who owned it said, like, would you like to be our business partner? And I said, went to tell my dad. So I was being offered 10% of the business. So he said, so you're doing 100% of the work for 10% of the profits. I said, yeah, well, that doesn't sound great when you say it like that. So he said, look, I'll back you. This was 2005. We went looking for bars to buy. Perfect time to pay a lot. Yeah, perfect time to borrow money, but like, you have to borrow a lot of it. So that was how things kind of happened quickly. And I said to the guy, do you want to sell a bar? And he said yes. And then that kind of, you know, a couple of weeks or months later, I was getting the keys of it.
You know, like, the fundamentals of it, like, you know, what would you kind of like advise doing? Like, for example, like myself, on hindsight, I would say, like, not do something that you don't want to do. So for you, you kind of got that down.
100%.
Were like, I'm not going to do these interviews. But I think people kind of like are like, they're like, oh, fuck, someone's giving me attention, I better go do this interview. That kind of vibe, you know? Yeah. So people are kind of just happy to take it. Do you think that's one of the main things as well, as don't be doing something you don't want to do?
I think it's okay for a job to be a means to an end if your job isn't going to be your life. So for me, I really enjoy work, and it's probably, it probably was 100% of my identity. You know, maybe it's a bit less because I'm doing some other things, like, you know, being a dad, and I've got really involved in some not-for-profit stuff. But for a lot of other people, I think it's okay to have a night. If you're good, you might be good at something and not particularly like it. You know, it might pay really well. You know, like, I don't know if anyone really enjoys, you know, I don't know, being an actuary or one of these like real brain box jobs, but they're good at it, it pays well, so fuck it. And it might just be, you know, a means to an end, and that's okay. But I think if you really like, especially if you're starting off and you don't have dependents and you don't have any, okay, you mightn't have any money, but you don't owe anyone any money. You don't have mortgage bills, you know, or kids, take a punt, like keep messing around until you find something you like doing, because it's not that long a life, you know, and 10 years kicking around an office that you're not enjoying, it's just a waste.
You're not putting your best foot forward. You're not putting your best foot forward for it. And I don't think you're not like trying something and going out of your comfort zone. And I think that's kind of like, I think that's where a lot of people kind of like push through, is that we're at that brink of it's too much for me, or I'm in comfort zone and trying to like get through that side.
I suppose for me, I it's a little bit different now, as I said, because I have kids. So like being home is a thing, but like before my default setting up, if I had a day off, it would mean that I have nothing else on today. So I'd be in work as well. So I'd be, and I just really enjoy it. I suppose it's a bit different, particularly electric's open, or was pre-COVID, about 80 hours a week. So like there was, you know, we open at 10 in the morning and we close at midnight, 7 days a week. So there was always, you know, it's just kind of your, like some people go to the living room, I would go and have a coffee electric because that's kind of my default setting. And it didn't feel like work. I really enjoyed it. You know,
it was a passion for you. That's what it came for.
Yeah. So, and it's funny, just before things closed, I wouldn't say I kind of fallen out of love with electric, but it just hadn't, I wasn't as proud of it as I was of other things. It had just gone a bit stale, you know, like we still had a good product, we had a really good team there, but I kind of felt we weren't really anyone's first choice restaurant. And that was bothering me. And we probably would have trundled along and have done bits and pieces, but now with the mindset for COVID, we're actually completely changing the business, both physically inside and when builders are allowed on and off with the lockdowns. And the kind of food offering and stuff is going to be completely different when electric reopens. It's a gamble, because electric is a good business. You know, it turns over a lot of money, and but I just feel that it just could be better. You know, look, that's a gamble. Maybe it's me just fiddling with it, but I'm going, and it's probably one of the, I've probably taken bigger gambles, but not with something that was doing okay. You know, but it's 10 years old, and I just feel if we're going to rock it for the next 10 years, we just need to have a sharper offering. So look. In a year, I'll tell you if it's worked or not.
Yeah, like, why do you feel like you've got that kind of feeling? Like, where has that kind of come from? Do you think it's just because you're used to it? Or do you think it's because you have kept your eye up to competition or changing times?
There's a few things. Some would be just, I suppose, metrics you put up. So, like, if you're going out for dinner on Saturday night, you book it. You know, you're booking it Tuesday or Wednesday because all the best, your favourite places are full. And so I'd see, like, we'd always be full on a Saturday, but it mightn't fill until Friday, you know, like, and I'm wondering, are those people ringing Market Lane and Liberty Grill and Isaac's, and we're not that top of that list. And like, we'd have people who would come for our Christmas party, and we'd have a lot of, you know, anniversaries and IT. So they always come for their Christmas party, but I wouldn't see them between the Christmas parties. So, you know, they say, okay, we've really good night there, and we go there every year. And, like, it's a safe bet. We can have steak and seafood, and they have good vegetarian options. I just don't know if anyone's excited saying, I can't wait to go, you know, like to wherever. And I have a few restaurants that I love. I mentioned a few of them, like Liberty Grill would be really up my list. I don't get to Liberty Grill. I'd go to Liberty Grill for breakfast every day if I could when it's open. And I would be excited about it every time, you know. And I don't think we had that. Like, that's what you want, you know. So, and we were lucky. We were really busy when the summer's out. We were really good for Christmas and jazz. We did the big days. But like, was anybody coming just for our food and for our cocktails? And I think they were good, but they weren't great. And I suppose I just want them to be great again. You know, I want people to be excited about the offering. And I think we've a really good team there. We've a good location. So there's nothing stopping us. You know, like, we have all the tools there. It was a bit like with the pizzas. We're chatting about the pizzas a while ago in Sober Lane. I said we did pizzas for 15 years. When COVID hit, there were 60% of our food sales. And we stop doing pizzas. I'm not going to do pizza anymore because I just felt that they weren't as good as they could be. There's other people doing really good pizzas, whereas I felt our fried chicken was really good. Like, I'm confident our goujons are as good as anything that's out there anywhere. And I think we do amazing nachos. Like, people might get excited about nachos, but our buffalo chicken nachos are the fucking best. So, you know, like, I just think that I am confident that offering, like, you know?
Yeah, I love that perspective, Matty. You're not happy. Like, I can see it in you that, like, you're just trying to squeeze that extra bit out of performance. And I think I can kind of see it in you, you know? And I think that's really cool, man. How do you think that you're going to elevate this? Like, and not even going into, like, we're going to get new fucking knives and forks. But I mean, like, is it a cultural shift? Is it a physical shift? Like, how do you pick this up?
Well, two things. One, when you renovate a place or open it, put a new offering or you open a new place, Cork is small enough that you're going to get traction day one. So, like, even if a place opens and there's a poor offering, it's going to be busy at the start. Whether you hang on to the customers, your own thing. So for me, like, once you get busy at the start, that's a mighty buzz. Like, it's really good adrenaline. And then, so that keeps you going for a couple of months. And then you're just kind of in the go of it. You know, like, so, because what's different about this versus new businesses, we've a really good team there. And I can see that they're bored. Like, so I've been talking about this and they're really excited. We tried it a few times over the years and we'd come out with this cool menu and say, oh, well, look, fish and chips are better setters. So our biggest setters, we better do that. And the corporates love steaks, we better do that. And we better stuff for the English market for the tourists. And then you end up with steaks, monkfish, fish and chips, burgers. And it's the same menu as everywhere else. So on our new menu, we'll actually have none of those things. Maybe chicken wings, because every place in the world sells chicken wings and people seem to just eat chicken wings forever. I don't know what it is, but they do. So, it's good beer food. I get that. So they're excited about it. And that kind of is infectious. And another thing is we've really good staff retention and that makes life way easier. You know, like, the people you trust and like working with. So keeping them motivated is important too. And they're all excited about this, like, you know?
Yeah, it's all part of one piece. You know, I actually have hundreds of questions I want to ask you. I don't want to keep it all night, you know, but I want to talk about especially recovery. And I just spoke about their, like, motivation and staff retention, you know, small businesses. So as I said to you earlier, like, I interview a lot of tech people. I'm a tech person. I haven't been able to work at all. If anything, my work has fucking multiplied over the last year. But for a lot of people, they've lost that kind of motivation. They've kind of lost that kind of, I don't know, the general kind of enjoyment they had. No fault of their own, you know. Even if it's to do with your health, your fitness, it's no fault of your own. That's my belief. How do you kind of approach that yourself at the moment? Because you're even full of energy right now, you know. And kind of what would you recommend to people that are struggling, businesses, people, to try, like, kind of think about what's to come down the road?
Look, I suppose I don't know. I'm lucky in that we're established a long time. We're in a good place. We're any creditors. We didn't have a huge amount of them, really, just day-to-day stuff. I own the buildings that I'm in. I have a good relationship with the bank. So I had a fortuitous set of circumstances. You know, when we closed, it certainly was stressful. Those first 2 weeks were really hard. We were the first bars to close in town. I just felt that things were getting out of hand from a staff safety point of view. I wasn't even thinking about the customers. I was just thinking, this is, you know, and I could see the cancellations coming. I said, let's take a few weeks out. We can afford that and let's regroup. And then within 2 or 3 days, everywhere else was closing. So that was stressful because I didn't think of it at the time, but thinking back, we closed the business, you know, like, so not really know when we'd be reopening. But two things. One, as soon as everybody else did it, I said, well, okay, the country has to restart. Every business can't stay closed forever. So I said, okay, I'm not in this alone. That's okay. So that was something. But also, I said that resilience, like, I've had challenges in life. I've had business that haven't worked out. And I just, you know, so just get that kind of confidence. You've taken a few knocks. I said, okay. So maybe some people can stay stressed all the time for me. I said, okay, I've had 2 weeks now at home of freaking about this, let's try and figure it out. We've made some, they're big decisions for us. Like, so we didn't open at Christmas when everyone else opened. I didn't feel the reward was worth the risk. None of the staff wanted. So all our staff were bullying to open in the summer. And we did really good business. And, like, summers wouldn't be a great time of year for Sober Lane. And it was really good. It obviously would be a good time for Electric. But Christmas, best time of the year for every hospitality business that I know of. And we just said, this isn't for us. And and I'm happy with the decision, you know, like, so they were kind of big decisions, but I suppose we're still here and we're willing to reopen, and we've kept all our key staff and anyone else who wants to come back. So kind of so far so good, you know, there's nothing stopping us reopening that's outside our control, which is a nice place to be. You know, there's nobody, we're lucky we don't have landlord and rent pressures and that kind of stuff. So that's good. And also the I wouldn't say suddenly doing food delivery is innovation, but changing our offering has, and seeing it how is. That's gone and grown that. Yeah, well, it's very
pivoting.
It's nice and it's rewarding because it's given us, I like gimmicks and we've fun with them. So like at Christmas with all the orders, we gave a selection box in every bag, for example. It's just a small thing, but it's good fun, you know, like, and you just know that Burger King aren't doing that or McDonald's aren't doing that. So it's okay.
It's personal.
Let's see if we can have fun with that. So yeah, so I think we're working there. The next thing is, I don't know if we have anything lined up for Paddy's Day or for Mother's Day. We probably should. But for Paddy's Day, we're putting a little miniature whiskey in every takeaway bag. Just something different. The time to think about those things you don't really get when a business is open and going full tilt. You know, you don't get today to spend a day online, you know, getting proofs and samples of packaging and getting prices. And whereas at the moment, when you've a lot of downtime, you can do it. So, for example, with Kinsale, we're trying to figure out point of sale at the moment, trying to find if we can come up with items that, you know, we can bulk order and we can use in all the different markets, the US, China, and Ireland. I spent a lot of today messing around with beer mats and just the message on them. And because when the pubs opened the last time, there was no beer mats to be had. None of the companies had printed them. So I've seen that as a competitive advantage for us. We're going to be the first pub in the door, the first business in the door to pubs with beer mats, you know. And look, it's not revolutionary anything, but I think that if you don't have any, like, they sound like a small thing, but they're a very essential part of running a bar. So
they're sentiment as well.
So for the company that delivers, yeah, exactly. So if we can buy that goodwill and get some in-house branding, happy days. And usually those things would be beyond our budget. But because printers are that busy and because I have time to shop around, you know, it's an interesting time. And once work is interesting, quite happily lose myself in the minutiae of beer mats design and sourcing for the day, getting the best price, because I find that interesting. You know, it doesn't have to all be China and all the kind of fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool, man. Like, you'd never have that time, as you mentioned. And now, you, like, being a relationship guy, you can build those relationships and potentially have these beer mats going for future, you know.
Big time.
One last thing I want to chat about was around the bars opening later. So I think the agency that do this, or I was pushing ahead, was called We Own the Night, I think it was. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I think that could be wrong. Basically, after getting a bit of an extension, how do you think that's going to shape the bar and nightclub scene? Or do you think it will have that much big of an impact, or what's their approach?
For me, our business is, they don't go late. We have licenses to go late and we don't do it. I think that because of drink driving and different things and lifestyle choices, people have started going out earlier. You know, it doesn't happen as much in Cork as somewhere like Dublin, simply because you don't get after work drink stuff because we don't have a good, transport infrastructure. Whereas like the pubs along the Lewis would be rocking because people don't have cars and they can hop, you know, it can spend 2 hours in the pub and still be home for 8 o'clock or whatever. But it's a bit better here. They have the Nightlink buses and it's getting there. And there's a fair amount of drink cycling going on, which I'm not saying is a good idea, but it's probably definitely better than drink driving and whatever. So I think that, firstly, I get frustrated by licensing laws. So I think a pub should be allowed to open whenever it wants. You know, I'm somebody, I suppose, who feels about maybe that drugs should be legalized. I believe in free choice and it shouldn't be in any state.
And people are old enough to make their own decisions, you know, and have their own tolerance and things like this.
So if you want to stay up all night and be tired the next day or not go to work, that's on you. You know, like, and it self-regulates because, you know, your boss gives you 2 mornings and then the next day you decide, am I getting another job or am I going to go out again and whatever. But like, so most of the countries like England that went for the 24-hour pub licenses and stuff, very few places availed of it because we all have something to get up for the next day. You know, like, you might do once or twice for fun, but where I do think it is relevant is Cork has the earliest closing times in the country. So there's a local bylaw. So firstly, it's not a given that those hours will benefit Cork because it'll take a local decision to undo previous limitations. But secondly, I think Cork needs to compete more internationally. So if you're, I'm going to say a stag party, which I know isn't the most attractive tourism, but it's good for this illustration. So if you're in France and you're saying, okay, we're looking at the Ryanair website, we can go to Cork, we can go to Newcastle, and we can go to Prague. And in Prague, the pubs close at 5 o'clock, and in Newcastle, they close at 3 o'clock, and in Cork, they close at 1 o'clock. It doesn't really matter what time you stay out till, but you say, oh, well, we'll go to the place where they're open latest or later. You definitely won't pick the city where they close earliest in Ireland. So so I think that gives other cities and counties and it becomes a fair competitive advantage in us. And I do think there's probably room. Like, so I go out for a drink with the guys sometimes. The chefs tend to finish earlier than the bar staff. So they get to the pub and have some drinks, usually in our own pubs. But if you're, you know, you've the bar closed at 12:30, you're out the door for maybe 2:30 and everywhere's closed and you can't go for a drink after work. And even if you do, you have to go into a thumpy nightclub. Like, why can't you just go to a pub and have a few drinks? And just because you're having a drink at 3 a.m, it might be your first drink and you might have anything on the next day. So who's to say that you can't? So I think it's good news. I think that they need to be... the other thing with late licenses is it's pro rata. So it costs €420 per night plus solicitor's fees. Let's call it €500 a night. But it's the same for any pub. So it's the same for Copperface Jack's and Sober Lane. So it's unviable for the smaller places. So it leads itself to bigger places that tend to be louder, nightclubs, which are made for, you know, drinking shots and you know, there's nobody drinking coffee in Copperface Jack's.
Large volumes. It's built to be,
large volumes. Drinks. So I don't mean antisocial behavior, but certainly drinking more and towards binge drinking. Whereas, you know, if you go into a place and everyone's having a few Guinness and whatever, regardless of the time, it's a different atmosphere and it's more conducive to drinking more slowly and at the pace that you choose rather than the upbeat music and the place being packed and it's vodka and Red Bulls.
Trying to get as fucked as possible.
Yeah, exactly. Because you've only got an hour to do it and you've paid a tenner in on the door, so you're going to make a count, you know.
Yeah.
So it's... I adore nightclubs. I was stuck in one for a while. There's maybe 6 or 8 nights a year that you want to go to a nightclub. You know, a friend's birthday or the day a buddy has a baby, you know, or whatever. But the rest of the time, you just... You know, pub close and wouldn't mind a few extra drinks. You know, like, why does it have to be to a nightclub? Or why, even for nightclubs, why do they have to close at 2? Why can't places be smaller? Why can't they open later? That's my take on it. But funnily enough, it won't change our operating model.
I just hope for nightclubs that they do eventually get to stay a little bit older. Because, like, you know, myself, huge into music, really into nightclub scene. I'm in Dublin now, like, so I've loved going to the clubs in Dublin. I end their class. And I would have had to get up and go to Europe to get like the best availability of nightclubs. And I mean, like, where it's Amsterdam, it's Berlin, or when I lived in London, like, man, like, you go to fucking places like Egg or you go to Fabric and they're closed at 8 a.m. And I know obviously it's a different model, it wouldn't necessarily work in Cork, but again, as you said, this is why I fly to London, is to go to these nightclubs. I don't fly to Cork to go to
there's some great small clubs in London, like District exactly. Would be one of my favorites, but yeah, it doesn't have to be a 1,000-person job, like, you know?
Exactly. And then, so again, it gives you more dynamic. And I think, well, you know, whoever's behind it is doing a great job. But it's a good opportunity now when the whole kind of world is changing to just be like, okay, let's try squeeze it to like 4 a.m. And if we do it to 4 a.m.
It's a good time for change, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I think the best time to kind of put your foot in is something like this now, where maybe you could have come from an angle being like, look, we're all fucked. We're trying to generate additional revenue. The additional 2 hours will bring up revenue in this club for so much. So good opportunity at that.
If you had said to me before, and I still think it would happen, but there was a chance, for example, that restaurants would be VAT exempt, I'd say you're crazy. But there's some restaurateurs making an argument at the moment that supermarkets are 0% VAT, you know, food and restaurants are 9%. We've far more costs. Why? What's the difference? You know, like, and I am... And it's kind of gaining a bit of traction. So they've knocked it from 13.5 to 9. And I think if they knock to 0, it might be temporary. But like, these arguments are being heard. Because usually when they're open, I think if you see a busy restaurant, say, oh, fuck, they're making loads of money. You know, pubs, they're making loads of money. There's a reason pubs are closing before COVID and restaurants rapidly in the country. Like, so pubs and nightclubs in particular. Yeah, fierce rate of decline. So like, it's so much money, why are they closing? You know, so I think, but... when everybody's closed, nobody's making money. So it's a kind of a guilt-free time where you can make and be heard with these arguments, you know, saying we need this. Okay, if the reason you're going to give it is to recover from COVID, fine. We've needed it all along. And if we can prove that it works and we respect it, then it will stay, like, you know.
Don't worry, man. It's the same across every industry. Like, I'll never forget this. When I was working the last couple of years, I remember I asked, could I work from home on a Friday for a wedding? that I had. And I was like, oh, like, can I just like work at home on Friday? And they were like, no. They're like, no, can never be, you'll never ever be able to do it. Fast forward then a couple, you know, X amount of fucking months and years, I'm never going back to an office. Like, you know, like as in like as in if I was to go back into office there in Dublin next year, I'd probably go back for like a day or two. But like, you know, I don't know. I can just do way more shit, yeah. You know? So it's funny. And especially people that are like my generation are like, you know, they won't do anything anyway. So yeah. They're going to be people that would give out the most. So that's why it's kind of good to have these people in their corner, maybe to fight for like, you know, extension of nightclubs or things like this.
Yeah.
People that are kind of a bit more brazen towards taking it as it is. You know what I mean? Small things.
And social media is good for, it's really good for campaigning for things like that.
Exactly. You know, you just get a mob behind it and people be like, oh yeah, yeah, let's do this. You know,
it works. So. It works.
Exactly. Man, I want to say a massive thank you. And there we have it for yet another episode. I would like to say a massive thank you to Ernest again. It was a lot of fun to sit down with him and just chat about the hospitality beverage industry, chat about the recovery, chat about pretty much everything. And it was pretty fun. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it gave you a laugh. I hope you learned a couple of things along the way. So again, if you want to drop me a follow, that'd be pretty sweet. If you don't want to, that's chill too. I'll leave it here. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And I'll see you in the next episode.